From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante.
Almost all of us have someone in our life who has just become lost. It seems like they've been suckered in by politicians who blatantly lie, or by pundits who keep moving the goalposts, or by online conspiracy theorists who tell them not to believe what they hear anywhere else. And sometimes by false prophets who say they speak directly to God. And Zach Mack has someone in his life like this as well. It's his father. In a new series from NPR's Embedded podcast called Alternative Realities, Zach decides that he's going to try to bring his father back to reality. And when his dad came to him with a list of 10 predictions that he believed would absolutely happen before the end of 2024, Zach felt like he had a tool to do that. And so he and his father engaged in a bet, a wager of $1,000 per prophecy that comes true or doesn't by the end of the year. And from the beginning, Zach, he knew he was going to win. And he did win. He won the money. He won all of the money. But if you listen to this series, and by the way, you should absolutely listen to this series, you're almost certainly going to wonder who the real winners and losers were. Zach Mack has co-developed and produced other podcasts like The Rewatchables, The Big Picture, and Binge Mode. And he's the host of Alternate Realities, which you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. Zach Mack, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Zach, let's set this up with a few of the prophecies your dad told you, like that without a shred of doubt in his mind would come true.
Yeah, I mean, they can all really be grouped under the like subhead of politically apocalyptic. So, you know, he thought Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and the Clintons would be rounded up and convicted of treason. He thought martial law, that our country would come under martial law, that an electromagnetic pulse device would be used to wipe out all digital communication across the U.S. It's the same thing they use in Ocean's 11 to pull off the casino heist, if you remember. So yeah, it was just a lot of like big politically apocalyptic type of predictions.
And he was certain. It's not just like he's like, hey, buddy, I think this stuff might happen. He was certain that this was going to happen by the end of the year.
He used words like 100% positive. And yeah, he was absolutely sure. As sure as you are that the sky is blue, he knew these things were happening.
And this all sounds crazy. And the thing I think it's important to note here is that your dad, he fully acknowledges that it sounds nutso. That's his word. He uses the word nutso.
Yeah, he said, I know this sounds nuts, but it's going to happen. And I said, you know, it does sound nuts, and I don't think it's going to happen. So, you know, that was the beginning of our disagreement, one of many disagreements.
And nuts and disagreement can be harmless, but this wasn't harmless. Your dad was spending a lot of money on the sorts of things that would be helpful in an apocalypse. His beliefs about queerness were impacting his relationship with his daughter, your sister, who came out a couple of years ago. And he was growing more and more distant from your mom. That must have all been really hard to watch.
Yeah, it's been incredibly hard on the family, and hard in a variety of different ways. Like his relationship with my mom and sister has sort of, you know, deteriorated for a variety of reasons. You know, when people get into these like more panicked conspiracies, it often does lead to spending lots of money, right? You often see people like Alex Jones, right, from InfoWars. He's pumping all these conspiracies, these doomsday type things. And then he's like, oh, and buy this special doomsday pack. Buy this pack that has all this survivalist gear in it. And I don't think it's a problem to be a little bit prepared for whatever the thing that could happen in your area, you know, whether it's wildfires or earthquakes or, you know, I don't think it's a problem to be a little bit prepared. I think it's a problem when you sort of start going overboard and this sort of panic begins to consume your life. But I will say, you know, in defense of my father, he's never really been a paranoid person. He's not somebody who moves through the world as like incredibly stressed or anxious. You know, he's out all the time. He's very social. He is out in the world, and he's not a shut-in.
But the warning sign, the big red flag, is that he was spending money and not telling your mom about it.
Totally. Yeah. So there's a trust issue. He was pulling, I think, a significant sum of money out and like trying to invest in, you know, precious metals and yeah, just doing things without her consent or knowledge. And, you know, that's just like a violation of trust. And, you know, my parents are both, my mom is retiring this year. So I think their funds are really important because it's meant to sort of set them up for the rest of their lives, right? You know, like they're not going to be working much longer.
And so, speaking of money, you guys come up with this bet. He suggests it. You accept it. $1,000 per prophecy for 10 prophecies that he says will come true by the end of the year. But in addition to accepting this bet, you also convince him to let you record your interactions, a lot of your interactions at least. And I get, you're a podcast creator. You ask other people to make these sorts of agreements all the time. But did it feel different to ask your dad to agree to this sort of agreement?
Yes and no. The thing is, it wasn't that difficult at first because he was so enthusiastic about it. He thought it was a great idea. He was eager to, I didn't have to twist his arm or really try to convince him. He was on board immediately. He was positive that he was right. So he was like, well, in a year, you'll be proven wrong. Unfortunately, my son's been brainwashed. He works in media and I'll prove him wrong at the end of the year. So he didn't have any worries about, you know, the concerns about looking bad because he was so positive that this was all going to take place. And then I think just also he was just sort of excited to engage in conversation with me in this way. You know, my father and I are not particularly close. We haven't been close, and really bonding over Ohio State football is kind of like the one thing we really agree on, because politically, religiously, you know, there's a lot of things we don't agree on. I think he was excited to be a part of it. And as soon as he challenged me to the bet, I sort of immediately, my producer brain went off, because he gave me all the things you could ask for in a story. He gave me stakes. He gave me a deadline. There was a central tension. There were good characters, things that I think were highly relatable. I think a lot of people who are queer also know what it's like to deal with a parent who's not totally accepting of their lifestyle. And there's also just the conspiracy part, which is, I would say, the main part. And so many people are just falling deep down the rabbit hole into these conspiracy theories. And it, just in the days since my podcast has come out, I've already gotten hundreds of people in my inbox saying, hey, I'm going through the same thing. Thank you so much for sharing your story. So I knew early on, or at least I suspected, that this was happening all over the country and that this story would be important to tell. And the fact that I have my family's full support and full participation, that made it a lot easier to make the decision to do this story.
Because as a storyteller, as a journalist, you recognize those elements. Of course, this is, I mean, like in addition to your dad, I mean, your dad was enthusiastic, but you had to ask your mom and your sister to be vulnerable in this way with you too. Were there times that you felt like, okay, like as a journalist, wow, this tape I'm getting is so compelling. And then as like a brother and a son, you're like, ooh, oh man.
100%. Yeah, I think it was very difficult and challenging, and I thought about it a lot, and I wrestled with it, and I think I still wrestle with it a little bit. Not so much now because the response has just been so overwhelmingly positive, but I just knew that this story was important and that I thought I could tell it in a way that felt fair and with a lot of heart, and I didn't foresee a lot of negative consequences for them. So I took a risk, and it's going well right now.
This story that you tell, it's not just about your dad's belief in these prophecies that he learns about from watching fringe Christian pastors on YouTube. It's not just about the bet you make. As we mentioned earlier, you watched your parents' marriage dissolve during the year of this bet. That's on full display here. That's the hardest part as a listener. That's the hardest part to listen to. My heart breaks.
I think it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking to watch a family go through this. It's been heartbreaking for everyone, for me, you know, my mom, my sister, and obviously I think people who are listening are, I've gotten so many messages. It's like, hey, my heart is breaking for you and your family. I think the point is to just show it as real as I can, and not to be exploitive, but to just be authentic.
Well, one of the things that authentically comes through is that your dad's not some horrible human being or some dumb person, right? Like one of the things that makes the conversations with your dad so difficult, it seems like, is that he insists that he's not actually saying I'm right and you're wrong. Rather, he's saying, and these are his words here, I have access to more information so I can see the bigger picture more clearly than other people can. As those words come out of my mouth, it sounds a little condescending, but when you hear it from your dad, it's like he's just like, hey, buddy, if you just had all this information too, you'd believe this stuff, which is weird because that's what you're telling him as well. You're like, hey, dad, please just look at the facts.
Yeah, I think if anyone were to sit down and listen to this, you immediately see the tone is not like while it's heavy and serious, you also hear my father and I just joking around a lot and having a good time together and honestly bonding through this process. So it's come with, there has been a lot of upside in the sense that my father and I have gotten closer, and I do think we've been able to communicate in ways that we never have before. You know, before this podcast, we were just having the same circular argument over and over. It wasn't going anywhere. And then once we started this podcast and the bet, it changed the way that we spoke to each other. And I think I was able to come into this with a lot more empathy, a lot more patience. I was able to be just more curious about how he came to these beliefs and how I might be able to pull him out.
You spent quite a bit of time with your dad during the time that this bet was active and this project is ongoing, and before it was even completed, there's this moment that he tells you that if he had to pay you 50 grand for the time you spent together, that every penny would be worth it. And, you know, for whatever reason, that made like the conspiratorial part of my brain start working. And I just thought, oh my God, Zach's dad has just figured out how to pay his son for time together. By the way, as a dad whose kid is about to go off to college, I was like, I totally do this. That's brilliant. But also I thought that's a little nefarious. Like, did you ever worry that during this process that like that's
no. No, my father's just not manipulative in that way. And also, you know, one thing that I want to make clear is like, we're not big gamblers. We're not people who make bets very often. We're also not rich. So $10,000 is a lot of money. It's not something it's more than we've ever gambled in our lives, probably collectively. So yeah, it was surprising, but yeah, at no point did I think he was actually paying me for my time. I think we were having these circular arguments over and over. And I think he got to this point where he just said, well, let's put some money on it. You know, it was like a dueling egos of who's right. And let's put $10,000 on it, which is, you know, the stakes get a little higher.
Okay. And they get higher and higher because like, okay, so this is a long-term bet, but as you're getting closer and closer to the deadline, you're like, dad, none of this stuff is happening. And he's like, it will.
Right. Right. With a lot of these people who are into conspiracy theories, there's a level of denial. Nobody wants to think that their beliefs are wrong, right? That's a really harsh reality to come to grips with. And I think it's been challenging for him, and he hasn't fully processed it. So yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, you say, I mean, nobody wants to be wrong. There's a quote that you share in this series. It's often attributed to Mark Twain. You also point out that it's apocryphal, as so many Twain quotes are, but this quote, it gets shared a lot because it feels very true to so many people, that it's far easier to fool someone than to convince them that they've been fooled. And whomever it may be from, that sentiment, you know, like it aligns really well with something the psychoanalyst Eric Fromm argued, which is that people cling to false beliefs because facing the truth would mean taking responsibility for their choices. And I'm wondering if you think that's part of your dad's steadfastness, because he's already sacrificed so much for these beliefs that if it's all for a lie, it's kind of for nothing.
Totally, totally. And this is, you know, I spoke to one of the guys who is an expert on conspiracy theories and does a lot. He's a clinician, and he was saying, you know, I think your father is experiencing a lot of death anxiety about, you know, his looking back on his life and wondering if it has meaning. And I do think if you look back on your life and you feel like you're getting into your later years, you say, oh, if these beliefs are all wrong, then what does that mean about everything I've done up until this point? And if I feel like I'm running out of time, it's a tough thing to grapple with, right? And I think a lot of people, as they get older, you start to look back and you start to judge, like, was it all worth it? And did I do things the right way? And I think it's really hard if the answer is no, or if you were incorrect about some things.
The part that you're referencing right now, and I'm not going to give this part away because it's so important for people to hear. And if I haven't said it enough on this podcast, like, everybody should listen to this. But I guess I just want to make that point that, like, the mortality piece of this is pretty profound.
And it's real. And I feel it too. I think all of us are sort of afraid to die and afraid of, like, what happens. Does our life have meaning? You know, does the things that we did over the course of our life really, like, what does that add up to? I think a lot of us are wrestling with that. And I think typically the older you get, the more you start to grapple with it. And you just see that the time running out. And so I do understand that. And I will probably grow to understand it a lot more in the coming years as I age. So I understand that aspect of it quite a bit. And I also just understand the misinformation aspect. You know, my father is not an internet native. He's not somebody who really understands how to navigate the internet very well. He's tech is just a real foreign language for him. So it makes someone like him much more susceptible to these sorts of ideas and misinformation.
Okay, so I kind of knew that these internet prophets existed. I put my browser on incognito mode to, like, pull them up because I didn't want, like, the cookies to be chasing me all over the place. But holy moly, man, like, it's a little terrifying. And I kind of assumed that the production values would be better, right? Like, that I would watch this and I get it. I'd understand why it was so, like, enamoring. And it's not. It's like these gritty, grainy, kind of crappy videos that they're recording from, like, their living room with these weird, like, halo star effect filter.
I think that speaks to the fact that my father is not an internet native. He's not someone who's very familiar with the internet. He's not on social media. And so production value, I think he's just impressed with any production value. You know, it doesn't really have to look that good or seem that professional. But whereas me, I work in media, I can immediately spot, like, an actual editorial operation, you know, versus, you know, someone just DIYing it in their basement and being able to say whatever they want with no accountability. That's the scary part, is this, all these people can just say whatever they want. And, you know, maybe some of them believe it, maybe some of them don't, and are just sort of acting in bad faith. But regardless, it's really insidious and it's all over the internet, totally unchecked. And there's no accountability.
Isn't it weird as a journalist to feel that way? I've wrestled with this for years now, right? Like, where, you know, I came out of the gate and I'm like, freedom of speech, I'm going to give my life for it. And now I'm like, there's no accountability for this. What the hell's going on?
Yeah. I mean, if I got something wrong, you know, we'd have to print a retraction, or, you know, there is accountability within the institutions that I work for. And you can't get something wrong. And if you do, it's a problem. You know, there are fact checkers, there are people vetting us. And honestly, one of my favorite parts in the series is, to refer back to the moment you were talking about earlier, is my father quotes Mark Twain to me and he misquotes it. I didn't know he misquoted it when he quotes Mark Twain to me. I assumed it was a real quote. And I had just heard a Mark Twain quote days before that was in my head. And I quote one back to him. So we sort of have these dueling Mark Twain quotes. And then I get to late stage production and it goes through the fact check and they go, hey, Zach, you know, that quote your dad used, it's misattributed. Mark Twain didn't actually say that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then they go, oh, and by the way, the one you used, that one is also fake, you know? And I thought it was hilarious that we both misquoted Mark Twain to each other. And I was like, let's put that in there. And it's proof that I can be wrong too. You know, that it's, I don't have all the answers, but at least I have fact checkers, right? At least I sort of rely on the operation that is more likely to get me to the truth than he is.
One of the things I've thought about a lot recently, Zach, is that these days, you know, if we become estranged from our families or friends or neighbors, we can piece back together something that feels like community through parasocial relationships, the sorts of connections that your dad has to these YouTube prophets and others who he doesn't actually know personally, but he can form a sort of relationship with through media. And what happens to us because of this, I think, is that the risk of being ostracized by the actual physical people around you isn't as great because it's not as instantly so lonely. But I think that also draws people ever closer to the edge. Do you think that happened with your dad? Where, like, I mean, like, even as your mom's like, whoa, buddy, and your sister's like, dad, you're being a jerk. And you're like, man, you're totally wrong about this stuff. And his friends are pulling back, but he's got these prophets and they love him.
I don't think it's about him picking the prophets over us. I actually don't think he really has a strong relationship with them. It's less about any one person who or community that he has a relationship with. It's a much more about him clinging to his worldview, his clinging to his beliefs. And I think his worldview and those beliefs are more important than the community and unfortunately more important than his family to him.
Do you think he started feeling prophetic after a while? Like he's writing a book, or he says he's writing a book that's going to change the world. It's going to be a New York Times bestseller.
I mean, I could see that in some of the things that he says. I do think he believes that he has a much stronger relationship with God than most people, but he has not claimed to be prophetic. But I do think he feels more tuned in to God than the average person. And that is why he feels he has a little bit more of an advantage when it comes to assessing information, is because he feels more plugged into God.
You note pretty early on in the series and repeatedly that in a lot of ways, you and your father got closer during the year of this bet. It seems like you had to reach a point, though, in which you sort of accept that you lost part of him in order to do that. Am I reading that correctly?
I think I'm still wrestling with that part and sorting through my feelings. I think there is still a part of me. It feels very Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. You know, there's like, oh, there's good in you. I can still see it. You know, like I can feel it. But yeah, there is also a level of acceptance of understanding where he's at and knowing that I can only do so much, and that it's not my responsibility and it's not my fault if he doesn't come back to reality. But you know, when we started the podcast, it wasn't like we started from a neutral place. We started with the family is already in such a tough spot. You know, I to put it in a football metaphor, you know, we're already down and the clock is running out. You know, this whole thing was a Hail Mary pass to begin with. It was us trying to do something big and dramatic to try to save the family, to try to pull him out of this stuff. And you know, with Hail Mary passes, they have a lower success rate.
I'm wondering though, and let me see if I can extend this metaphor a little bit. I'm at a soccer game the other day, you know, 90 minutes plus injury time later, the visiting team scores a goal on our team and there's no time left on the clock. Everybody starts to leave the stadium. And my wife turns to me and she goes, well, I guess we can go. And I go, no, there's still a chance. And the ref blows the whistle and there's literally one pass. And then he blows the whistle again and the game is over, which is a horrible thing for a referee to do. But my point being, like, there's like hope springs eternal for sports fans, right? So I'm wondering now, like, your Hail Mary has failed. It didn't work out, but there's still time on the clock. Your dad is still here with us. There's still a part of you, right, that thinks maybe.
100%. I even thought this series coming out and him having a chance to listen to it would help him hear himself differently, right? He sort of gets to see himself outside of himself. And I think that might have an impact on him. Again, hundreds of people have reached out. I do plan on kind of compiling a lot of the contents of those emails and like showing it to him. Things like that and him losing the bet will continue to chip away at his confidence in some of these beliefs. You know, I do think it is effective over time, I hope. but we'll see. You know, we'll see. He's pretty stubborn.
That's Zach Mack. He's the host of a new series from NPR's Embedded podcast called Alternate Realities. And if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to his three-part podcast about his bet with his dad, please do. It's truly great storytelling. Zach Mack, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio. And if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us, then you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University and from listeners like you. You can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.